This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
In 2001, Vonage revolutionized home phone service, making it better. After such a colossal breakthrough, who would have objected if Vonage said, "Enjoy better, world. Vonage will be at the spa." But today, Vonage is not at the spa having its trouble area worked on, but transforming communications for your business with award-winning cloud-based solutions. See how your business can get the better it deserves. Call 1-800-5-VONAGE or go to Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Leadership change afoot in D.C. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Thursday, October 29th. Welcome aboard. Here's what's up this hour.
The path is clear for Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan to become the next Speaker of the House. He'll officially replace John Boehner if a public vote goes according to plan today.
The third Republican presidential debate had its share of fireworks and humor, including Rubio deflecting a Bush attack and Cruz calling out the moderators.
The Royals have taken the first two games of the World Series from the Mets. The best of seven series moves to New York City for Game 3 tomorrow.
And a list of the best jobs in IT and engineering.
Data scientist, you're talking about a median annual salary somewhere in the neighborhood of $125,000 a year. Petroleum engineer, you can make on average over $130,000 annually. But in general, these IT positions do pay pretty well on average, well ahead of many of the other sectors in the economy.
Kyle Kensing at CareerCast has the hot jobs, salaries, and growth prospects in about 20 minutes. Republican presidential candidates Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz pushed through the clutter to appear as the winners of the latest debate. The 10 Republicans on the main stage at the University of Colorado frequently talked over each other and the moderators in an effort to stand out. Mr. Rubio, a senator from Florida, pushed back against Jeb Bush when the former Florida governor attacked his attendance record in the Senate.
When you signed up for this, this was a six-year term, and you should be showing up to work. I mean, literally, the Senate, what is it, like a French work week? You get like 3 days where you have to show up?
The only reason why you're doing it now is because we're running for the same position, and someone has convinced you that attacking me is going to help you.
Ouch, Rubio swatted that away. Mr. Cruz, meanwhile, a senator from Texas, scored by attacking the news media, calling out the CNBC moderators for their questions.
This is not a cage match. And you look at the questions, Donald Trump, are you a comic book villain? Ben Carson, can you do math? John Kasich, will you insult two people over here? Marco Rubio, why don't you resign? Jeb Bush, why have your numbers fallen? How about talking about the substantive issues people care about?
Man, that was off the top of his head. Recalling the other comments from other candidates and moderators, that was pretty good, right? That's why he was a champ debater at Princeton. Elsewhere, Ohio Governor John Kasich was quick to go on the attack against frontrunners Donald Trump and Ben Carson, calling their tax plans a fantasy. Well, in an earlier debate that featured candidates with lower poll numbers, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham again gave a lively performance, making the case for things like a strong interventionist American foreign policy, calling for an immigration overhaul that allows some illegal immigrants to stay in the U.S., and claiming climate change is real. The candidates largely avoided attacking one another or their fellow Republicans, focusing instead on Democratic candidates Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And Mr. Graham did it with humor.
Good God, look who we're running against. The number one candidate on the other side thought she was flat broke after her and her husband were in the White House for 8 years. The number two guy went to the Soviet Union on his honeymoon, and I don't think he ever came back. If we don't beat these people, who the hell are we going to beat?
If we don't beat these people, he said, who the hell are we going to beat? Also used the word crap, which attracted some attention, as did Ben Carson in the later debate. Mr. Graham, by the way, was joined in the secondary debate by three others, including the well-spoken Louisiana governor, Bobby Jindal.
In the last 7 years, President Obama has tried to teach the American people that government is the answer to all of our problems. Where has that gotten us? We're on the path towards socialism.
Also on stage, former New York Governor George Pataki and Rick Santorum, the former senator from Pennsylvania. They were excluded from the primetime debate because of low poll numbers. Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan is set to become the youngest Speaker of the House if a vote today goes according to plan. The promotion for the 45-year-old was all but assured yesterday as the GOP conference voted in a closed-door meeting to nominate him. There's still a public vote by the full House to get through today for Mr. Ryan, a nine-term representative who's currently chair of the powerful Ways and Means Committee.
We are not going to have a House that looked like it looked the last few years. We are going to move forward. We are going to unify.
The only other candidate besides Mr. Ryan was Daniel Webster from Florida, who reportedly got 43 votes to Mr. Ryan's 200. Mr. Ryan will need 218 votes to be elected Speaker today if all House members are present. Most of Mr. Webster's supporters are expected to vote for Mr. Ryan. The vacancy was created, as you know, when current Speaker John Boehner of Ohio announced last month he was retiring. He leaves office tomorrow in part because the Rebellious Freedom Caucus, a group of about 40 conservatives, threatened to force a no-confidence vote on his speakership. It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You always want to look great, but don't have the time or the patience to go shopping. With Trunk Club, you never have to set foot in the mall again. Trunk Club takes the hassle out of shopping by shipping you a trunk of clothes that fit perfectly and make you look like $1 million with all the new fall styles. At trunkclub.com/morning, all you have to do is answer simple questions about your style, preferences, and size, and then you are assigned an expert stylist. They curate clothes from the best premium brands, and you approve what you like. Just like that, a trunk arrives on your doorstep filled with hand-picked clothes that are perfect for you. Try them on, keep what you like, and easily return what you don't in their prepaid trunk. This is not a subscription service. You only pay for the clothes you keep. No hidden charges, just great clothes. And right now, their entire styling service is free. Even the shipping. You only pay for the clothes you keep. To take advantage, go to trunkclub.com/morning. One more time, that's trunkclub.com/morning for a trunk filled with clothes you'll love wearing. Thanks for being with us. At least some history might be on the way to repeating itself when it comes to today's Republican presidential race. You might recall that former candidate John McCain in 2007 went from being a front runner to launching a nearly broke campaign that was shedding staff, but he eventually became the nominee. James Antle, politics editor at the Washington Examiner, says former Florida Governor Jeb Bush could use a McCain-style comeback right about now. He joins us on the T-Mobile hotline. Jim, how so?
I think if you look at Jeb Bush's campaign right now, he's not doing very well in the polls, and he's starting to have problems raising money, which was supposed to be his biggest asset, was his fundraising prowess in connection to all these big donors. But what happened is a lot of people gave money to him early, maxed out, and because he's not doing well in the polls, he's not attracting big donors anymore. So, you know, is there any precedent for a guy in Jeb's position recovering and winning the nomination? And the only recent one, I would say, is John McCain. McCain's campaign was broke in the summer of 2007, essentially. They were laying people off. And eventually he was able to recover and win the 2008 nomination.
Interesting. So what turned it for him? Was there an actual point?
Well, I mean, here's where I think it gets difficult for Bush and where I think the analogy could potentially break down. McCain benefited heavily from the fact that the front runner of the time was Rudy Giuliani, and he collapsed. Giuliani had a plan that he wasn't really going to try to engage in some of the early states, Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and he was going to wait till Florida to make his big stand. And by the time Florida rolled around, the campaign had passed him by, and McCain was popular in New Hampshire and was able to win New Hampshire, as he had done against George W. Bush in 2000, and that set him on the comeback trail. That made him relevant again, that helped him raise some money. The problem for Bush is he's now trying to wait till Florida to make his stand. He hasn't officially said that he's not going to try to compete in the early states, and he does have a good bit of staff in New Hampshire. But at the moment, it doesn't seem like any of those states are obvious places where he would come in first. And if the current frontrunners, you know, Donald Trump or Ben Carson, collapse, it's not altogether clear to me that their supporters would gravitate to him in the way that a lot of Giuliani voters moved to McCain in 2008.
All right, interesting. We're speaking with Jim Antle, politics editor at the Washington Examiner. His piece is called "Can Jeb Stage a McCain-Style Comeback?" So what do the observers say needs to happen? Is it going to be in a debate? Is it going to be a particular speech? Is it going to wind up being somebody else faltering to clear a path for him?
I think the debate is a good place to start. I mean, because so far the debates have attracted a significant audience, much bigger ratings than we normally see this early in the campaign, largely thanks to Trump. So I think if Bush has a good debate moment, that would be a good place to start a comeback. I think he is, however, in a position where he really does need a number of other plausible candidates to falter and potentially find himself in the position where maybe he is the anybody but Trump candidate or the stop Ben Carson candidate, you know, assuming that the party establishment, if it has any juice left, may not feel that those candidates could win a general election against Hillary, and they might then be able to get some more resources for Bush. But I think he's really got some tough sledding ahead,
yeah.
And, you know, he seems to really not be handling his position in the polls very well.
Thanks, Jim. Jim Antle, politics editor at the Washington Examiner. 20 minutes after the hour now on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Florida Republican presidential candidate Marco Rubio says attacks by fellow candidate Jeb Bush during last night's debate are a political ploy by a struggling candidate. Bush criticized Rubio for a spotty voting record on Capitol Hill and told Rubio he should be showing up for work, being that he signed up for the job. Rubio fired back.
The only reason why you're doing it now is because we're running for the same position and someone has convinced you that attacking me is going to help you. Well,
many political analysts say Rubio was the clear winner of the debates, while Bush and Ben Carson did not fare well. Former House Speaker Dennis Hastert is averting a potentially lurid trial that could have dredged up allegations of sexual misconduct decades ago. By agreeing to a deal with prosecutors, it recommends he serve no more than 6 months in prison. Hastert pleaded guilty to evading banking laws in a hush money scheme, but the judge warned Hastert that he could go beyond the deal's recommendation and give Hastert up to 5 years behind bars when he is sentenced in February. Drug makers Pfizer and Allergan are considering combining in what would be a blockbuster merger. A bid for Allergan, which has a market value of $113 billion, would be Pfizer's second recent attempt to acquire a big rival following its failed courtship last year of AstraZeneca. Combining Allergan and Pfizer would create the world's largest healthcare company with a market value of about $330 billion. FIFA President Sepp Blatter says FIFA leaders struck a secret agreement to award the 2022 World Cup to the U.S. before the organization even voted. But French President Nicolas Sarkozy and European soccer leaders intervened to blow up the deal. The disclosure made by Blatter in an interview with a Russian news agency adds more fuel to the corruption scandal that's shaken the soccer world. And AT&T has been busy lately promoting Jordan Spieth during his rise through the golfing ranks in recent years, but the company may have outdone itself this week with a mosaic of Spieth's face. AT&T used 24,152 golf balls to recreate Spieth in downtown Dallas's Main Street Gardens.
What?
It's extraordinary.
Is it?
Check it out online.
24,000 golf balls?
It looks just like them.
No way.
Yeah.
We'll look. Thank you, Jennifer. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
You appreciate the feeling of a clean, smooth shave from a quality blade. So why are you messing around with generic razors that cost $32 for an 8-pack when you can shave with Harry's high-quality German-engineered blades for half the price? Harry's will give you their starter set, complete with a razor, three of their world-famous blades, and shaving cream for just $15. And shipping is always free. We'll also give you $5 off your first order. So go to harrys.com right now and enter code 7799 at checkout. Code 7799.
Time now for a technology update, and it's brought to you by Staples. Staples has more for less on everything your business needs to make more happen every day, plus free shipping and up to 5% back when you sign up for Staples Rewards. Staples, make more happen. Looking to steer your teenager into a hot career? We hear a lot about STEM jobs these days, right? Those in science, technology, engineering, and math. How about specifics? The jobs website CareerCast has compiled a list of the best jobs in IT and engineering. Kyle Kensing is online content editor. Kyle, what do you have?
number one within our list for 2015, actually, biomedical engineer, one where you kind of see the crossroads of IT technology and medicine, and of course healthcare being the other top field in terms of hiring over the last decade or so.
Wow, this is a lot of growth and a lot of fast growth, it seems like.
Absolutely, a lot of fast growth, a lot of burgeoning fields. You know, as I mentioned, biomedical engineering is one. And then number two, data scientist is another one that's really kind of a new field, still being fleshed out a little bit, but really high demand as businesses look to parse all this data that they're able to get from users that they weren't able to in years past.
Well, you know, I'm looking at this list and I feel so intimidated and inadequate just thinking, okay, not smart enough for that one, not organized enough for that one, not skilled enough for that one.
Yeah, it's absolutely a lot of high-skill positions, a lot that require a decent amount of training. But in that regard, something like data scientist, one of the highest growth outlooks within our list, and certainly high income potential, because it's still sort of a new profession, this is one that doesn't necessarily need a college degree in order to get started if you're able to kind of teach yourself the skills.
We're speaking with Kyle Kensing, online content editor at CareerCast.com. They've got a list of the best jobs in IT and engineering. Some big salary figures here, too. Take us through some of them.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, data scientist, you're talking about a median annual salary somewhere in the neighborhood of $125,000 a year. Petroleum engineer, you can make on average over $130,000 annually. But in general, these IT positions do pay pretty well on average, well ahead of many of the other sectors in the economy where you're making, you know, in terms of this top 12 list, at the very bottom, the annual mean salary is still in the low 60s. So really high income potential in all these fields.
How come a computer programmer, for example, is only showing 8% projected growth?
Well, in terms of computer programmers for this specific job, this is more on the hardware side as opposed to the software side, and the software is definitely gaining more traction. The hardware, a little bit less in demand, whereas software, it's still sort of growing quite a bit.
You know, I was looking at petroleum engineer too, which you mentioned before, big median salary of $130,000 and projected growth 26%. But that seems to me like that could be an up and down type of position, right? Depending on supply and demand when it comes to things like oil.
Exactly. It is very reliant on the supply and demand side. But that said, once the supply starts to go down, actually the need for a petroleum engineer does sort of go up to continue meeting the demand. That's a position that, even though the industry itself fluctuates, there's still that need for people who are specialized in the field.
Thanks, Kyle. Kyle Kensing, online content editor at CareerCast.com. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
In 2001, Vonage revolutionized home phone service with voice over internet. After such a colossal breakthrough, who would have objected if Vonage said, "Enjoy better, world. Vonage will be spending some me time at the spa." But the thing about better is, there's always more better. So today, Vonage is not at the spa having its trouble area worked on by a masseuse named Moonshadow, but with its nose to the grindstone, transforming communications for your business by making it better. With a cloud-based infrastructure that grows as your business grows. Seamless mobility between all devices so you don't miss that important call, even while Moonshadow is walking down your spine. And all for less than you think. So while you're getting your mani-pedi, Vonage's toenails remain a complete disaster, because Vonage is still out there working to make more better. See how your business can get the better it deserves. Call Vonage at 1-800-5-VONAGE or go to Vonage.com. Vonage, the business of better.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Good Thursday morning, October 29. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Paul Ryan expected to be elected House Speaker today. That South Carolina cop has been fired for the way he removed a student from class. Three injured at a mall shooting in Indianapolis. On the tech front, Motorola and Verizon introduced the Droid Turbo 2 today. Big whoop, you say? Well, it's got a shatterproof screen. Deutsche Bank getting rid of 35,000 people. Royals up now 2-0 on the Mets. And after debate number 3, does the height of the candidates matter? That story in about 20 minutes. Well, what's happening nationally on the presidential campaign trail is also happening in Florida. Voters are rejecting more traditional candidates, including their former governor, Jeb Bush, and their current Senator Marco Rubio, in favor of political newcomers like Donald Trump and Ben Carson. So writes Rebecca Berg at Real Clear Politics. How is this happening even in Florida, home base for Bush and Rubio? Rebecca, what'd you witness?
So it's very interesting what I found in Florida over the weekend following Donald Trump at a few of his rallies. What we're seeing nationally with Donald Trump and with Ben Carson as well to a certain extent is this energy from Republican voters for people who have never been elected officials before, who are political outsiders and who speak their mind without filter. And we're seeing the same thing on the ground right now in Florida. And that's reflected in polling that we've seen in the state, where Donald Trump, according to the Real Clear Politics polling average, currently leads by 8 points in the state. Next is Ben Carson. But then after that, we have Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush, two hometown guys who are really not getting any sort of recognition from the people who have supported them over the years. So it's really amazing that the Trump effect in this election is so strong that it's even causing Florida voters to give up any sense of loyalty they might have had to their home team, essentially.
Yeah, well, you alluded to it, but man, I mean, Floridians elected Rubio and Bush to statewide office. I mean, what has happened here?
They did, and that's not insignificant either, because when you have that sort of name ID, when you have the organization within the state that comes with winning a statewide election, usually that would mean that in a presidential election, you would have this huge baked-in advantage.
Yeah.
But it also means that the voters are more familiar with some of the things that Bush and Rubio have done wrong over the years. And in particular, I found a great deal of a number of people who were really upset over their immigration positions, and for that reason were giving Trump a very serious look. But it's also just a symptom of what we're seeing across the country with people not wanting politicians elected to the presidency. And Rubio and Bush, of course, have both been politicians in Florida. Yeah. Rubio is right now. And so they see that as a complete non-starter.
We're speaking with Rebecca Berg, national political reporter at Real Clear Politics. Her piece is called Florida Voters Spurn Bush and Rubio for Trump. All right. So you mentioned, too, the high voter turnover. What is that in Florida? Why? And what's the relevance?
So the thing about Florida is that it has one of the highest voter turnovers of any state. At this time, there are about 12.9 million registered voters in Florida, and three quarters of those voters, according to a study that was done by Bloomberg News and a Florida political science professor, that study found that three quarters of the current registered voters in Florida have never seen Jeb Bush's name on a ballot.
All right, thanks, Rebecca. Rebecca Berg at Real Clear Politics. 22 minutes now before the hour on This Morning. America's First News.
You're a small to mid-sized business with 300 to 3,000 employees. You face the same network security challenges as big businesses do, but can't support a big IT investment, leaving your doors open to advanced cyber threats. Barracuda Next Generation Firewalls provide all the core features of enterprise firewalls and UTMs, but without hidden costs and deployment hurdles, making owning a big business firewall no big deal for your SMB. Reclaim your network. Try a Barracuda next-gen firewall risk-free at barracuda.com/firewalls.
Glad you're with us. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, there are many different ways to measure who wins a debate, and one of the ways we use in 2015 is the reaction on social media. At least by that measure, Forbes.com says that Ben Carson could have won the night as he gained more Twitter followers during the evening than any of his opponents. As of last night, Carson had drawn over 6,000 new followers to his feed, besting Marco Rubio, who added just over 4,000. Donald Trump, who had already been booming on Twitter, brought in 3,500 new followers. Forbes does point out, though, that social media traffic appeared to be down a bit from the second Republican debate, perhaps due in part to Game 2 of the World Series taking away some of the attention. Both Ben Carson and Carly Fiorina gained more than 20,000 followers during the last debate.
Oh.
Now, of course, at some point, too, there is is going to be a saturation as well, which I think is part of it. As these things go along, look, we already know who these people are. If we like them, we've already followed them. So it is going to be a saturation. I think the numbers just kind of gradually go down as we go along,
you would think. Yeah.
But the World Series might have had something to do with it, although on my news feed, pretty much everybody was following the debate, and I think me and like two other people were watching the World Series.
Right. I think, just looking at my count, I gained four, I think, followers on Twitter last night.
Yeah, and I think our show maybe like 3.5. So so we still have little ways to catch up. So anybody looking for someone new to follow, you can just follow us.
There you go. At Radio Gavin 1.
Oh, yeah, that's me.
And at Gordon Deal.
There you go.
On my side of things.
We got plenty of room.
Plenty of cynicism and sarcasm, as we like to say.
And a man's festive attempt to cheat a Washington State carpool lane, Gordon, with a zombie baby doll has earned him a $136 fine and some Twitter fame for the doll. During Tuesday morning's commute, a trooper pulled over a man who tried to use a creepy Halloween doll to gain access to the carpool lane of Interstate 5 in Tacoma. Trooper Guy Gill tweeted out a picture of the doll that was dressed in a pink outfit with a black winter hat and creepy red skeleton face. While this means a lighter wallet for the driver, the trooper did at least find the humor in having a zombie strapped to the front seat with a seatbelt, tweeting, "We gave him a break for not having a car seat, and at least he's in the Halloween spirit."
Right. It's pretty clever.
That is me. We get these every once in a while. You hear about somebody who puts a doll or a mannequin or something in the carpools.
Doll or mannequin, yes. But this.
Yes.
This was a really creepy picture, too.
Plus, it was really, really kind of small, kind of looked like a kid almost, like a kid zombie. So yeah, definitely creepy if you're going to pull up on that.
No remote control, like that could get a scream out of that doll. You roll down the window to speak to the police officer.
That would have been something.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike. It's 15 minutes now before the hour on this morning. America's First News. Thanks for being with us. It's 10 minutes before the hour on this morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Republicans have nominated Wisconsin's Paul Ryan to be the next Speaker of the House. The House GOP Twitter account made the announcement after lawmakers cast their votes yesterday via secret ballot. Daniel Webster of Florida was the only other candidate who ran. Ryan, who will be officially voted in this morning, thanked the current House Speaker for his service.
John Boehner served with humility and distinction, and we owe him a debt of gratitude.
Lawmakers will vote aloud one by one in today's traditional vote. Jeb Bush targeted Marco Rubio in a fight for control of the Republican Party's establishment wing in the third Republican presidential debate, as insurgent outsiders Donald Trump and Ben Carson defended the seriousness of their White House bids. Bush was once seen as the top Republican contender, but he entered last night's debate in the midst of the most difficult stretch of his campaign. By attacking Rubio for his spotty voting record on Capitol Hill, Bush signaled that he sees his fellow Floridian as the candidate most likely to block his political path. The Greek Coast Guard rescued 242 people off the eastern island of Lesbos after the wooden boat they traveled in capsized, leaving at least three people dead. Rescuers continue to search the rough waters for more survivors. The Coast Guard says it remains unclear how many people were on the boat when it went under. Secretary of State John Kerry says the U.S. is intensifying diplomatic efforts to end what he calls the hell of Syria's civil war, even as it increases support for moderate rebels. Kerry is traveling to Vienna for talks with foreign ministers on ending the 4.5-year-old conflict. Iran is in for the first time taking part in such talks, which will also include Russia, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey. And Royals pitcher Johnny Cueto delivered arguably the finest performance of his career, allowing one run and two hits in a complete game 7-1 romp over the New York Mets in Game 2 of the World Series. It was the first complete game thrown by an American League pitcher in the Fall Classic since 1991. Game 3 set for New York City Field tomorrow night.
Is there any other way you want to rub it in? Just going on and on about Cueto. I mean, a right already.
Romp. That's the word I use to rub it in. Romp.
8 minutes in front of the hour. You always want to look great, but don't have the time or the patience to go shopping. With Trunk Club, you never have to set foot in the mall again. Trunk Club takes the hassle out of shopping by shipping you a trunk of clothes that fit perfectly and make you look like $1 million with all the new fall styles. At trunkclub.com/morning, all you have to do is answer simple questions about your style, preferences, and size, and then you are assigned an expert stylist. They curate clothes from the best premium brands, and you approve what you like. Just like that, a trunk arrives on your doorstep filled with hand-picked clothes that are perfect for you. Try them on, keep what you like, and easily return what you don't in their prepaid trunk. This is not a subscription service. You only pay for the clothes you keep. No hidden charges, just great clothes. And right now, their entire styling service is free. Even the shipping. You only pay for the clothes you keep. To take advantage, go to trunkclub.com/morning. One more time, that's trunkclub.com/morning for a trunk filled with clothes you'll love wearing.
Hello? I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller. I wish I had a girl who looked good. I would call her. Wish I had a rabbit in a
If you checked into the Republican presidential debates last night, did you happen to notice how tall or short the candidates were? Natalie Andrews, social media editor at the Wall Street Journal, says the physical stature of presidential hopefuls is a big issue. Natalie, why are we interested in this?
You know, Google's data editor, the guy that studies all of this data, he attributes it to people wanting to kind of form an idea of who this person is. Hmm. And one way we do that is by size. We do that by age, you know, kind of watching them talk, but also wanting to know what they would be like if they were standing right next to us.
Boy, you know, you wonder what role TV has had.
Yes.
Right? Since, I don't know, when the debates first show up on TV, 60s or something like that? It would be interesting to kind of measure it that way, although we didn't have Google then, obviously.
Yes, but it's interesting because the tallest candidate in elections has won about two-thirds of the time in presidential elections. So it is an interesting thing, and it's happened more so since 1960 when people actually got to see the candidates side-by-side in televised debates.
Wow. All right, so put this, I guess, in today's terms and give us, I don't know, some heights of some of these candidates. Let's play the game.
So our tallest candidates are Jeb Bush and George Pataki. They both come in at 6'4", which would tie them, if they won the presidency next November, that would tie them with Abraham Lincoln for being the tallest. And then we have, on the shorter end of the spectrum, Lindsey Graham is 5'7.5". And the women are shorter, but they're both, while they are shorter than the men, but they are both taller than the average female. And Carly Fiorina is 5'6". Hillary Clinton's height is a little bit disputed. She's...
What a surprise.
She was reported as being 5'5", widely, when she ran for president in 2008. And now she's being reported as being 5'7".
Wow. We're speaking with Natalie Andrews, Wall Street Journal's social media editor. Her piece is about the height of the presidential candidates. Are the candidates aware of this, and do they do anything about it to address it in some way?
You know, we haven't seen, as the candidates, they obviously know if they're tall or they're not. We haven't seen too much. We've seen more speculation on social media that they might be doing something or can they be helped. We've seen Sanders supporters talking about it on Reddit. They were saying, you know, does he need, you know, should he slouch, should he not slouch, that kind of thing. And Jeb Bush, in the last debate, people commented because it looked like he kind of went up on his tippy toes and did a head nod. But when we asked the and people on Twitter that night were like, oh my gosh, look, he's trying to be tall. But when I asked the campaign about it, they said, oh my goodness, this is ridiculous. He was just trying to look over the cameras and give a head nod to his wife.
So to that point, then, might a candidate actually bring a small platform to stand on, say, at the debate, or is that a no-no?
I don't think that will happen. I think that would get much more attention than the candidate's height.
Yeah, thanks, Natalie. Natalie Andrews, social media editor at the Wall Street Journal. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Hey, thanks for listening. If you love our show, we'd love it if you took a few minutes to give us a review on iTunes. And while you're at it, make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter with the handle @ThisMorningShow.